Hi, this is Greg Schultz from Storage.io. I'm here in Amsterdam at Ceph Day, being hosted by InkTank and 42on.com. And joining me here in Amsterdam is none other than Curtis Preston, a.k.a. Mr. Backup from Truth in IT. How are you, Curtis?
I'm just fine. So we're doing a very weird thing here, simulcast.
Is more than a simulcast, because what we're doing here is, those of you that are listening to the podcast, I've got Curtis as a guest, and I'm actually a guest on Curtis's video right now.
It's like a weird cast. I don't know.
I guess this would be true multiplexing, multitasking, diplexing, and who knows else, because we're in Amsterdam.
I don't really want to go there.
So, well, that's right down the hall. That's right down the alley where you don't want to go.
Right. Don't go that way. So, I think Greg did a... never mind. So, we are here at this Ceph conference hosted by 42on.com.
42on.com and InkTank.
Right, and InkTank. And 42on.com, it sounds like, maybe you know more than I do, they were originally a customer... and then sort of became a believer in the product.
Yeah, well, let's take a step back here. So we are here in Amsterdam at what is known the Tobacco Theater. And this is a old venue where that was involved in the tobacco trade. If you go back and read your Dutch history, at least that's what I was told. Anyway, where this goes back in terms of for today, this all focuses around the technology of Ceph. Okay, for those of you that are out there in the web hosting, in the services, the cloud space, you're probably familiar with Ceph and Rados and those related technologies. But for those of you who aren't, Ceph is an object-based storage system that can be used for building object storage for clouds, public, private, setting it up for repository, for hosting websites, for WordPresses, sites like Dream Hosting, facilities like that. InkTank is a services organization, being Ceph is open source based. InkTank adds the value of providing service and support around the Ceph based technology, kind of like what Red Hat does or did with Linux. 42on.com is also a partner, partnering with both InkTank as well as around the Ceph community at large.
And what, from a, I understand that. InkTank, sort of their sort of monetary stake in this and how they plan to monetize it. What's 42on's role that way?
42on is a partner that's involved with the ecosystem, where InkTank is a U.S. with a global reach. 42on.com, think of them as a local presence, a local point of presence, partnering with InkTank, representing the Ceph community.
And people would be using services from 42on.com that would have Ceph underneath it, is that it?
Yeah, correct. I mean, the underlying technology, again, think of like in the context of like OpenStack. OpenStack is open source. You can go and get it and download it and either put your people on it to facilitate the installation, the deployment, the care, the feeding of it, or as in the case, again, we'll use Linux as an example, good, bad, or indifferent, where you can go to Red Hat and actually procure it from Red Hat, and they help you with the install, the service, and the support. So in other words, adding additional value to the care and feeding ongoing support of the open source-based technology.
And what do you know in terms of, and so I know that Ceph is, you know, it's an object-based storage. It provides, you can interact with it either as an object system, a file system, and also via cloud storage type APIs, right? A REST type.
Yeah. I mean, think of it this way, is the whole idea around object storage is it's another layer of abstraction above what we've had before. At the lowest level or block, then you have your file systems, and then you have object on top of that. And as a part of that, that abstraction is allowing you to scale performance, scale capacity, scale with additional feature functionality, introducing wide area storage, geographically dispersed type storage. But how you access these systems is via APIs such as a HTTP REST, maybe an Amazon S3 Lite or an Amazon S3 Full. It might be via an application binding, a Python or a PHP or, you know, any of your different common bindings. But then you also have different personalities, or if you want to think think of them as interfaces. So in other words, there are vendors out there that overlay these objects, systems or services that you can access via iSCSI. For example, a company called Zadera that will sit in front of an object system and enable you to access it via iSCSI for block or NFS or SIFS for file-based. So the idea is that you have a lot of different ways to attach or to bind. If you're using a cloud backup service, chances are that service has an agent that goes onto your server or plugin or gateway that presents itself or collects the data. In other words, Curtis, you're familiar with Commvault Sampana. Commvault Sampana traditionally writes to tape, then it writes to disk, either in tarballs or file save sets. But Commvault is an example of a vendor that can also talk to the object system,
right,
like the Nervonix, the Amazons, the Rackspaces, or with some gluing, something like a Ceph. So somebody could take the Ceph technology, put it on whatever servers you want, whatever underlying storage you want, build out your essentially private cloud or public cloud infrastructure, and then add different personalities. I want to say have it like Burger King, have it your way, but that's probably not a good analogy.
Yeah, I was at Burger King this morning, and they didn't want to give it me my way.
But again, you're in Amsterdam. You probably weren't in Amsterdam.
I was
yet.
At Utrecht.
You were still down in Utrecht.
So, you know, Ceph is new to me. All right, I first heard of Ceph when I mentioned it to you the other day when I saw them in Frankfurt. When they were exhibiting at, what was that, Storage Networking World Europe,
yep,
right?
SNW Frankfurt.
And so the first question I had, which you remember me asking, was, does the world need another file system? Or even a global file system? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, here's the thing about these object-based systems, and there's a lot of them out there. Some of them are just software you can download. Some are open source. Some are proprietary. There's a lot of them that are tin-wrapped. In other words, you're buying the software with somebody's hardware packaged around it. EMC Atmos is tin-wrapped software. Hitachi Content Platform is the Archivist software, which remember that Hitachi bought. That's tin-wrapped software. EMC Sentara, tin-wrapped software. Scality software, you saw them the other day as well. That software is similar to a Ceph that you can use and deploy. Amplidata, that's tin-wrapped software. So there's this common theme is that you've got these software, whether you call them a storage operating system or a cloud operating system, an object stack, that are used. You deploy them on the different hardware, either a software or as a bundle, but then you can put a file system interface on top of it, or a block, or XML, or JSON, or whatever your interface happens to be. So is it another scale-out global file system? Well, if that's how you choose to use it, it could be.
And what do you think the primary applications for something like this are?
The most obvious ones, Curtis, are anything involving services. In other words, web services, entertainment, video, communication streaming, social media type sites. In other words, those sites, a Facebook, a LinkedIn, a Yammer, these different services that you go and use. Or if you're using something like Comcast or DirecTV, where you have video on demand type services. Those are the obvious. Email hosting sites, email services.
And what about this type of, and for the viewers, I keep pointing to a sign that the viewers can't see. I'm pointing to a sign that's talking about, that for what about Ceph makes it the obvious choice for, or makes them the obvious choice for Ceph?
Well, Curtis, a couple points there is that in addition to those items I mentioned, it's also ideal for setting up for archiving, for backing up to. In other words, you want to set up a backup as a service, an archive as a service, a data protection as a service, a repository. What's appealing about Ceph is that it is open source for those that are looking for that as an option. It is, since it's open source, you are also now free to configure it and deploy it on whatever platform, however you choose to do so. There is also that flexibility in that there are some systems that can scale for performance, some can scale for capacity. They scale in different ways. And with Ceph, it's that flexibility. Given it's deployable, it's flexible architecture that can be used in different ways. Again, you want to use it for an email, you want to use it for backup, you want to use it for video streaming. One of the good use cases they have is around dream hosting, based not too far from where you live in the LA area.
A term that is new to me.
Dream host?
Yeah.
That's a hosting provider. In other words, who do you host your blog and your website with?
A company called Liquid Web.
Okay. I'm using Bluehost for most of it, but then I do my cloud backups with Rackspace. Those are examples of organizations that could use Ceph-type technology or are. A lot of those currently are using things like OpenStack Swift or maybe CloudStack or one of the other different ones out there. So what Ceph is another alternative, but since it is out in that open source community, it has that scalability that can be deployed where maybe your provider, if they're not using it already, maybe they're looking at it for doing something new in the future.
So what is it, when you initially were talking about it, you compared it, when you talked about TenWrapped, you compared it primarily to archive destinations. What is it about? You didn't compare it, say, it's just escaped me, some other global file system, things like, what names?
Well, you've got a lot of different, you've got the real global file systems that are out there, the Nexentas, the ZFS-based systems, all the different Lustre-based ones, whether it's the Xyratex cluster store, or whether it's like an Isilon.
Yeah, Isilon. Yeah. Isilon was the one I was thinking.
Yeah, so all of those, they're the file systems, they're the clustered file systems. And you can use these tools like a Ceph. If you want to build a global file system, you put a file interface, a file personality, a file front end on something like a Ceph. And all of a sudden, now you have that capability.
When I look at, I guess I just have to, I'm a geek. I like to look deeper. And I'm not quite grasping what the difference is between, say, a Nexenta.
Yeah, okay, let's try it this way. At the lowest level, you got block, okay? And in a Ceph-type deployment, at the lowest level, you've got a server. It might be a 12-drive Dell R5 that's got 12 drives in it. And on that system, you're running maybe Ubuntu, if that's geeky enough for you. And you're going to, with 12 drives, you're going to set up 12 daemons. And those daemons are maybe running XFS Butterfile system or maybe EXT4. Those then present a store, if you would, to Ceph. Ceph then packages that and communicates with other nodes in the Ceph cluster that then the Ceph monitor, as requests come in, to store the data. So if you give me some data, then the monitor coordinates with the different Ceph nodes and says how the data gets spread out, how the data gets sprayed across the different nodes, and then also sets up the replication or the replicas across it. So in other words, is it a cluster? Is it a grid? Yeah. Is it similar to a global file system? Yeah. Is it more flexible? Yeah, because the global file systems typically are only NFS, SIFs, or maybe a proprietary interfaces. Think of these systems as even more scalable because you could build using a Ceph-type technology on cross of these other systems as an even higher, bigger, or Ubomungo, whatever descriptor you want to put on top of it. That's what, Ugo Geek Tech? Anyway, it's part of the building block. Just think of it as another abstraction layer. In other words, with file on top of block, you can get more scalability, flexibility. Okay, so you put the object across those file systems, you get even more scaling, more flexibility. Okay, then you put your different personalities. So if you want to create a really big NFS or SIFS or AFP or whatever you want to use as that file-based interface, HDFS for running Hadoop, you could put those as your personalities to plug in. Okay, or you could talk native via the APIs.
Well, that was certainly a geeky enough answer.
Curtis, you wanted to go geek, so we had to go geek.
All right, well, listen, I have one other. So, you know, there's one topic that always comes up when I'm around. So the concern, right, that I have when I look at yet another file system, however awesome it may be, is we've got this giant scalable file system, and then how do we protect the data? Now, if that data is being used as an ultimate repository for other data, that's one thing. If it's going to be a primary production file system for new data, how to back up that data does become a concern.
Great. And this is the part we were just about to get to, and we touched on it during that geek down there. Okay, one of the key attributes here, Curtis, is that like in a regular file system, your data is on a node, and then maybe it's replicated, or maybe it's mirrored, and then maybe you have to back it up per se. Okay, the data protection in these object type systems, these object type solutions, the data is replicated, the data is copied. So if you give me your file, you give me this video that you stream in, there's going to be a copy on a node or a group of nodes. But typically, you're going to have a N equals 3, N equals 5, and it's however you want to configure it for different number of copies. So rather than just straight replicating mirroring, you're actually having copies out there. Then you can set up additional policies for doing versioning. Mm-hmm. So think of it like in the regular world, Curtis, where the traditional storage world, that is, where you could, instead of discreetly backing up to disk or backing up to tape or backing up to the cloud, you could do time-based replication. In other words, replication with that time interval for that RPO, that RTO. That's what's going on here. And that's really a key piece to what this technology is doing, is that distributed data so that you don't have to back it all up. In other words, you're building the data protection into the architecture itself. Does that mean you shouldn't? Well, you may want to have multiple sites where a cluster is actually replicating to another cluster, where then that is a point-in-time copy, or you have time deferrals. One of the terms that you'll hear in as you move into the cloud space, the cloud storage space, object space, is a eventual consistency or an eventual copy. In other words, it's something even more deferred than an asynchronous. In other words, it might be this afternoon, it might be tomorrow. If that's good enough to you, sign up for that level, and we'll get to it when we get to it, as opposed to it's saved now.
But the idea of having, I mean, I certainly get the concept of what you're saying, but I thought when I talked to somebody the other day when I was first learning about Ceph, was that they couldn't do that across locations yet. They could do it within a location, but not.
Yeah, and this is where, you know, when you look at these different technologies, and Ceph is one of them, some of the differentiators are that some of the other options out there do allow you to have nodes that are geographically dispersed, or nodes that are geographically dispersed that are part of a ring or part of a different cluster, in other words, stretch clusters. Some have individual separate clusters or zones. For example, Amazon uses the notion of availability zones. So you may have different zones that then the data gets copied across the zones or across the different clusters. And then within those different clusters or domains, you have additional layers of redundancy. So it'd be similar to a traditional environment where you have RAID-protected storage with snapshots that are then replicated to another site. Where, in other words, the old adage, RAID by itself is not a replacement for backup. Mirroring by itself is not a replacement for backup. But if you have a form of copy combined with that time-based interval protection, you have an alternative to backup.
Yeah, I certainly am one of those who agree with that statement. You got to look at that really closely and make sure you really do have what it is you're supposed to have.
Absolutely.
But I do agree with that. What I was just trying to understand is how or if they're doing that yet with this particular product.
And that's where you dig into it more, and that's part of the how the evolution of where these are all growing is that, again, some of the technologies can do the distributed today. Some you have to do some gluing. Today you maybe have to do some gluing with some of them where you have two different clusters per se that then you're doing rsync across the top of them, some different. But let's turn that around the different way, Curtis, is that if you are currently doing traditional type backup and you've done the evolution from backup to tape, backup to disk, backup to cloud, well, you could go to one of the providers, Amazon, S3 Glacier, Rackspace, Cloud Files, Cloud Blocks, Nervonix, AT&T, take your pick. Or you could create your own. Buy one of the tin-based or tin-wrapped, the Atmoses, Amplidatas, the Hitachis, IBM, go down the list. Or you could build your own. You could build your own. Take a Ceph, put it on Dell or Supermicro or whoever's servers you want to buy or have in-house, configure the system up, present it as a file, or maybe you get to a partner like a Panzura or a Zadera that makes it look like iSCSI or NFS, and all of a sudden you've just created your target, your private cloud, if you want to use that term, target where then you can send your backups to, and it's that persistent store.
Well, I think that's enough questions for one day.
Well, Curtis, it's great to see you up here. And how about that dinner the other night?
Dinner was awesome. We've both tweeted photos of that Indonesian dinner in Utrecht. It was Utrecht.
You know, some will call it Utrecht, some will call it Utrecht. I guess it's, you know, whatever your pronunciation is. But to fill you in on this is that we had dinner at Blue, an Indonesian, and it was called rice bowls?
Rice dishes,
and I believe it was, what, about two dozen bowls of food?
It was a lot.
On the table, and, in classic manner, well, not only was it dedupe compressed in single instance...
That food was gone.
It was gone. It was three of us. That was spectacular. That was a fantastic meal.
Yeah, it was. Definitely.
And did you sleep well later afterwards?
Oh, yeah. If you're in the area, it's Blue, BLAUW. I think it's just blue.nl. It's restaurantblue.nl. That's okay. What it is. And you can even see photos of our meal up there on their website. So thanks for joining me.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot, Curtis.
And I'll thank you for joining or whatever.
Yeah. So, again, Curtis, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule. Great to see you here at the Suf Day. Literally, we are in downtown Amsterdam.
And make sure, so thanks for watching, and make sure to check out our other videos on TrueBit.tv.
And again, this is Greg Schultz, Curtis Preston from Truth and IT. What's the website again?
TrueBit.tv.
TrueBit.tv. And from TrueBit TV, you can get to your other sites as well, your blog, etc. There you have it. Mr. Backup here live with me as a guest in Amsterdam. So anyway, this is Greg Schultz from Storage.io. Okay, enough said.